Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. The Grateful for My Body Challenge has officially begun, and it is so incredibly exciting to see everyone moving through the challenge with us. Again, this is only 5 to 15 minutes a day, so we made it so accessible so that you can find time throughout your day, no matter how busy life gets. And this is really super crucial, especially in my life. We're going through a huge transition in life right now where there's just some hard stuff that is coming up in the family. And going back and giving back to my body is probably the last thing I want to do. I want to sleep and I honestly want to be at the hospital. But giving back to my body is something that's so incredibly crucial. So this challenge has just come at such an amazing time. And actually, we're interviewing Sarah right now, which we're doing a private Zoom with her to go into even more information on Sunday with only our community that is a part of the challenge. So you have to be a part of the challenge. If you have any personal questions on pelvic health or things that it's affected you in your life, you can get those answered on the live call with Sarah. And if you don't feel comfortable asking it there, you can always email me privately and I will ask on that live. So this is an opportunity to really come learn so much about your body. Every week we're talking about pelvic floor health in terms of relaxation and activation. So you start to understand what this pelvic floor does and how it really plays a role within our entire movement, because it's not just Kegels. It is so much more. So I hope that you come learn in this brand new challenge. This is something so incredibly new. It's so exciting to see everyone moving through. And if you are at all interested, need something that helps really get that stress, that tension, relieve those aches and pains, this is a place to start. So we're going to have that link down below, but it is jen.health/grateful. On this podcast next, we have Sarah Reardon, PT, DPT, WCS, who is a doctor of physical therapy and board certified pelvic floor specialist since 2007. And she has a lot of knowledge to share with us on this podcast. She is just a wealth of knowledge. And though we've had other pelvic floor therapists, we dive into a lot more topics specifically related, even from the time that we might menstruate, to the time that we go through pregnancy, childbirth, and beyond, and how the pelvic floor changes, what things we need to be mindful of, and even what happens when you go to the bathroom. Sarah specializes in the treatment of pelvic floor health, pregnancy, and postpartum recovery. She is the founder of The Vagina Whisperer, an online platform for pelvic floor education and exercise, and owns a private practice in her hometown of New Orleans called NOLA Pelvic Health. She is a wife, a mom of two boys, and you can find her on Instagram at the.vagina.whisper and TikTok at thevagwhisper. This is, again, such a great episode. Get ready to learn so much.
Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us. I just really appreciate it. I know that we've been following each other for a while on social media and seeing what you're doing and how you're educating. And it's so crazy. I feel like pelvic health is everywhere because it's what I know and what I follow, but it really isn't. People don't know. It's still such a common misconception in so many things, and especially going into, you know, pregnancy, childbirth, and what happens afterwards. So I think this is going to be such a helpful conversation, and I just really appreciate you taking the time being here with us.
Thank you so much. I've been following you all for a year and your journeys, and so this is just really exciting to be able to chat about this, really so timely for you all. So thanks for having me.
Of course. And the first thing I want to ask is just, your physical therapist decided to go into pelvic health and talk a little more specifically about pregnancy. Like, what was that journey like for you? What led you to this passion to really educate in pelvic health and health surrounding pregnancy?
You know, it's interesting. So I graduated from physical therapy school 15 years ago. So I feel a little bit like a dinosaur in this field by now. But it's when pelvic health was just not that well known. And out of a graduating class of maybe 65 people from Washington University, I was the only one who went into it. And I happened to have a professor who back then was called Women's Health Physical Therapy. And she just gave a few lectures. And I think I was attracted to it as a woman, in a female body. I was like, you know, this is really interesting just to learn more about my own body. And then I did a clinical rotation in it. And what I really fell in love with was how many people had these issues and how they were privately suffering with them and they didn't know where to get help. And my love language is words of affirmation. So when they would be like, this is so amazing, thank you so much for this, I was like, gosh, there's such a need for this. Why aren't more people doing it? And so it's not that like I found pelvic floor. I feel like pelvic floor therapy found me, and it's all I've done for my entire PT career.
Wow. So you came out and really just went straight into the education and working with clients directly on it.
I did. And, you know, it's all I've ever done. And I felt a little bit nervous coming out of graduate school thinking, am I going to lose all of my orthopedic skills? And I think if the way that we practice, just like you all, you look at these parts of the body as pieces of a whole. And that's really been kind of my philosophy throughout. I think that we may focus on one body part, but you're kind of looking at all of the systems together. And yeah, it's, you know, all of that I've done. I have two boys, they're 5 and 7. So 8 years ago, when I was going through my own pregnancy, I just was so grateful I was in this field and had this information. And that's really when I started to get motivated of, I think everybody needs this information. So sort of just being a little more outspoken about sharing it.
Mm-hmm. That's huge. And did you see a physical therapist yourself, like a pelvic health therapist, when you were going through your pregnancies?
Absolutely. I mean, I worked at a team of 5 PTs at a hospital in Dallas, and I went to one of my physical therapists or one of my coworkers during that time. And then even now in my clinic in New Orleans, there's 3 of us, and I see one of them on occasion if I need help. So we all kind of treat each other, which is, some people think it's a little bit weird, you know, but I'm like, this is just a day in the office for us. But yeah, I went during my pregnancy as well.
That's so great.
So in talking about pelvic floor, you kind of just mentioned like, us as physical therapists, we like to look at specific parts of the body, but I appreciate that you brought up, like, it's just a part of the whole. Mm-hmm. And
right,
being able to understand the importance of this forgotten pelvic floor within the context of our whole body. And could you help people understand a little bit about why the pelvic floor is so important? What are some of the main functions, even when it comes to movement in general?
Absolutely. It is, to me, one of the most important parts of our body. And when we're learning about our body, you kind of skip from like hips to knees and you pass over this whole pelvic floor region. And, you know, your pelvis is this ring of bones, and at the very base of the bones is a basket of muscles. And these muscles help support your pelvic organs. They're related to abdominal strength, to low back strength, to core stability, to breathing and respiration. And obviously, pelvic floor functions include sexual function, reproductive health, birth, and peeing and pooping. And I'm like, we all pee and poop. This is a pretty important part of our daily lives, but nobody's talking about this. And then we often don't even know that the pelvic floor exists until something's wrong with it. And so one of my huge passions is like, why aren't we educating folks earlier on, like when they, you know, are going through puberty or becoming sexually active or trying to conceive, and just all of these different opportunities to just make this part of our standard healthcare system versus doing damage control when we only are trying to fix problems instead of preventing them.
So, so on key and so on point for, you know, trying to open up this breadth of knowledge and get it to more people to understand this. But what are, you know, you mentioned even puberty. So what are some things that, you know, parents might want to be aware of with talking with children or hopefully older children, right? If they're starting to, or going through puberty or even starting to have sex, like what are some things that we should be starting to become aware of when we're talking about pelvic health in that way?
Right. So I think that part of this is kind of normalizing the conversation for our generation, that it really starts with the basics of anatomy, that you have 3 openings in your pelvic floor in a female body and 2 in a male body. And those openings, what are they for? One's for urination, one's for bowel movements, one's for sexual intercourse and vaginal birth and menstruation. So literally just showing people like, hey, this is your anatomy. I mean, we know what a foot looks like. We know what a hand looks like. Like, we're not really used to kind of knowing what this part of our body looks like. And it's just another body part kind of in my eyes. And so I think the basics of the anatomy, you know, how the muscles work, but also things like when you're going through puberty and you start menstruating, how do you insert a tampon? Like, do you know which opening to insert the tampon in? It shouldn't hurt. What are optimal positions to kind of insert it and relax your pelvic floor muscles? You know, my favorite story is when I was 10 years old the day I started my period, and I got braces on the same day. And I was like, this is the worst day of my life for a 10-year-old, right? I mean, and I told my mom, and she handed me a book and a box of tampons and was like, go ask your sisters if you have questions, you know? And so it's kind of like, this should really be part of just education and not so mystical. And then even when folks become sexually active, you know, explaining that, you know, this is your vaginal opening. This is your anal opening. This is what it should feel like. It should not be painful. I think we often think that, oh, maybe sex is painful the first time or the first time after birth or a certain time of the month, but really it shouldn't be painful at all. Or even when they're going to get their first pelvic exam at the age of 18, should that be painful? What are some tips to relax? So kind of just these little milestones in the life of a vagina, that where can we really help empower people and feel educated going into those experiences.
That's great. And I think that's where some of kind of this demystification and normalization has to come from, is early education and doing it with people from the time that, you know, they should start learning about these specifics of the pelvic floor, whether, you know, being a woman or a young man going through puberty and kind of coming in and learning more about your body. And you bring up pain during sex or pain during penetration of any sorts. Like, what might be causing that? Why might people be experiencing that pain? And are there things that they can start to work on or experiment or explore with if that's something that they're experiencing?
That's a great question. And, you know, these are muscles like any other muscles in your body. And muscles, sometimes they can be weak and sometimes they can be too tense. And I know after the past 2.5 years of, you know, a high stress time in our life, or raising children or being a working mom, my body holds onto tension, and I happen to hold onto it in my neck and shoulders, and I get really bad headaches. Well, some people hold onto tension in their pelvic floor. And if you have tension in your pelvic floor, it can make it difficult to initiate your bladder stream or empty your bladder completely. It can lead to constipation, straining with bowel movements, hemorrhoids, and it can lead to pain, either tailbone pain, pain with sitting, or painful intercourse, or trying to insert something into the vaginal opening, because those muscles are tense and they're not necessarily relaxing on cue. You can't talk to your pelvic floor and be like, chill out down there. You know, you really have to, especially when we're not really in touch with it or in tune with it. So just, you know, it's tension in these muscles, and tension can lead to pain, and that cycle can kind of persist over time. So really educating folks on what's maybe a posture that you're doing that could be causing tension, or is the way that you're breathing contributing to that, or some of the exercises you're doing causing overactivity, but you're not balancing that with relaxation. So just really, sometimes it's really practical things. Or how are you pooping? Are you straining instead of really relaxing? Just really simple things that I think we can start integrating. And once you say it, the light bulb goes off and people are like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And then it can start kind of unwinding it a little bit.
I remember one of your posts that you did, you talked about different tools that you can use to help with going to the bathroom, especially if you're away. So say you're traveling, or that was like one of my favorites, because that's what I do. I look for, where's the trash can? Can I flip it over?
Right.
Can I create my squatty potty? You know, in order to not have that strain when you're going to the bathroom. But I think that sometimes that becomes a normal practice, or at least what people think, oh, you know, he's going to be in the restroom for a while, or that's just what it's going to be. And why is that not normal?
Like, right, right.
I don't want to be straining. And why might we want to be propping our feet on something?
That's a great question. So, you know, the optimal position to relax your pelvic floor muscles is squatting. So when we often have this visual of how women or mothers give birth, it's with their knees up to their ears and their legs are wide open, and they're kind of in a squatting position, but lying on their back or their side. If you've ever been to Asia, or you've camped or traveled, and you have to squat over the ground to have a bowel movement, that's the optimal position to relax your pelvic floor. But in our Western culture, we have these, you know, commodes or toilets that we sit on. So a great way to kind of recreate that squatting position to relax your pelvic floor muscles is to put a stool, a step stool underneath your feet so that your knees get a little bit higher than your hip level. And that's what puts you in a squatting position. So they have a, you know, a common stool called a squatty potty that you can use in your home. There's travel ones, but if you can literally use, I mean, I've used my kid's suitcase when I'm traveling. I've used a sideways garbage can. You can use an Amazon box. I mean, you can a couple of yoga blocks, anything to really get your knees above your hip level. And then you lean forward and you want to exhale when you're trying to kind of bear down to poop instead of holding your breath. The reason that avoiding constipation or managing constipation is so important is because straining over time can lead to pelvic floor weakness. So this is how a lot of folks may have urinary leakage or pelvic organ prolapse, but never had kids, or hemorrhoids or hernias or diastasis recti and never had kids, or even postpartum when we see them. They have, you know, a lot of weakness in the area and they're like, oh, I have a childhood issue, a childhood constipation issue. So we see these things leading way back and they kind of catch up with us later in life.
Mm-hmm. I like that you bring up the whole, you know, exhalation as you're trying to pass stools or, you know, let something out, because that's kind of, that might seem counterintuitive to people in their head where, well, I need to kind of bear down in order to create that pressure internally. And I think that kind of bridges into some conversations that we might dive into about birthing, where like, what does it mean to push and what does it mean to be able to pass? So why does exhaling when we're trying to pass a stool help more than bearing down to create that abdominal pressure?
Right. It's so interesting because this idea of pressure has really become, you know, intra-abdominal pressure or managing your pressure has become such common conversation in the rehab and PT world. And I think we've seen when we are seeing people working out and they're not managing their pressure by exhaling or breathing properly, I mean, it can lead to dysfunction. It can lead to hernias and prolapse and hemorrhoids and urinary leakage. And so when I teach people to poop or when I teach people to give birth, I really focus a lot on their breathing. If you are pushing when you're giving birth, oftentimes that can be from 3 minutes or 30 minutes to 3 or 4 hours. And if you think about how long that pushing and straining can occur and all of that pressure on your pelvic floor, it can lead to a lot of weakness afterwards. The other thing is if you actually, I tell people this, like place your hand kind of underneath your bottom when you're bearing down to push, and do that when you're holding your breath, like if you're straining and holding your breath, and then do it when you're exhaling, like you're blowing out a bunch of candles. You'll actually feel it tighten if you hold your breath. So when we're thinking about pooping or giving birth and you're holding your breath to push, you're tightening your muscles instead of relaxing them. But if you exhale and kind of let that pressure go, you're going to have more movement to lengthen the muscles, kind of help the muscles get out of the way so that you could poop or give birth. I always say that giving birth is like, it feels like you're about to take the biggest poop of your life. So it's like the same maneuver. If you can master pooping, then you can master pushing during childbirth.
That's a good way to look. Good night. Talking about pressure management, you know, as we're going, or especially me in the stage that I'm in, you know, as you're growing a baby and the stomach is changing and there's different pressures that are now happening because a baby is growing, what happens to the pelvic floor through this pregnancy process, even before we're talking about labor or after? You know, what is happening naturally and how do we kind of support that through first, second, third trimester?
Absolutely. So I always, you know, I say that your pelvic floor muscles are like a hammock and they sit at the base of your pelvic bones. Well, during pregnancy, you get these emails that tell you how big your baby's growing. So your baby may be the size of a lemon, then the size of a papaya. And then at the end of third trimester, it's the size of a watermelon. So if you think about this hammock supporting a lemon or an avocado, it's not going to change that much in how much that hammock stretches. But, you know, in second trimester, when it's maybe a papaya or a cantaloupe, it stretches a little bit more, sinks a little bit lower. And then towards the end, a pumpkin or a watermelon, you've got a lot more stretch and a lot more, you know, length to that hammock. That's kind of the same thing that's happening to your pelvic floor during pregnancy. is that we want these muscles to kind of stretch and accommodate a growing fetus, but that also means it's not able to contract or engage the same way it would pre-pregnancy. So just pregnancy itself can kind of lengthen and weaken some of these muscles over time. And then in addition, the same thing happens to your abdominal wall. You know, our bodies are really designed to stretch and accommodate growing babies. So you have this tissue in the front of your abdomen, the midline of your six-pack abs that wants to stretch and help support growing baby as well. But sometimes that stretch can be really significant and lead to what's called a diastasis recti, which is like a thinning of the tissue at the midline, and it forms a little bulge. It almost looks like a little football coming out of your belly. These are all signs of pressure, right? We know that you have a growing baby. So what's important about this is it's regardless of what method you birth, whether it's a vaginal birth or a cesarean birth, your pelvic floor and abs are going to change. So you can't prevent pelvic floor weakness by having a cesarean birth. The other thing is you do want to make accommodations. Some of the things that I really recommend to people are simple things like rolling over to your side to get out of bed instead of doing a little sit-up maneuver to get out of bed. Same thing, getting off of a yoga mat or getting off the couch. You're really trying to want to minimize how much you're depending on your abs because they're already stretched during pregnancy. And then the other thing is modifying your workouts. You know, if you can kind of learn how to modify your abdominal wall, also incorporating exhaling into your exercises, that's going to be really key to minimizing how much, you know, change your body goes through. If you're doing a ton of crunches and, you know, lifting a ton of weight where you really have to strain, that's just going to weaken muscles that are already vulnerable. That's not going to benefit you. But I think really, you know, I encourage people to learn how to exhale, to drop their weight. It's not so black or white, like you can't do a plank or you can't do a crunch. It's how do you modify that to really fit where you are, like what your tissues can sustain without pushing past their threshold.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And I think I want to continue with this conversation about, you know, coming into birth, or if somebody is pregnant and kind of in that pre-birth stage. You've brought up modifying exercise, how the pelvic floor can be lengthening and stretching out. Same with maybe developing some degree of separation or that diastasis. What are things that people can do in those 9+ months of pregnancy to start preparing the body? One, to maybe, I wouldn't say combat some of these things happening, but continue to keep the pelvic floor engaged, continue to make sure you're paying attention to how you're engaging your core. So whatever degree of separation you do get, you know, you're kind of managing that as it's happening. Like, what would be the top tips of what people can be working on during pregnancy?
Absolutely. And this is one of my favorite topics because I don't think we're educated on this as part of pregnancy. So when it comes to prevention, I would say my biggest kind of light bulb tips are like, don't push when you pee. If you push when you pee, you're putting more pressure on your pelvic floor than what's necessary. When you sit down, and you should sit down and not hover unless you're in like a state park or a porta potty, I would sit down, take a couple big deep breaths, and just let your muscles relax, and your bladder actually does the work for you. So don't push when you pee, just sit, chill, and breathe, and let your stream come out. The second thing is managing your constipation. During pregnancy, you have a ton of progesterone in your body. You're probably eating differently, drinking differently, activity levels are different, and constipation is so common. So, you know, making sure that you are using your squatty potty, you're exhaling when you're pooping, staying super hydrated, or even taking a stool softener or some magnesium supplementation to help keep your poop soft, because straining with constipation can cause weakness as well. And my easy, easy tip that I tell people is to exhale with exertion. So if you are lifting up a stroller, if you're pushing a piece of furniture, if you're carrying a box of Costco groceries, little things like that can add up over time. So, you know, before you lift something, start exhaling so that you're not holding your breath. If you're in the gym and you're lifting weights or squatting, or, you know, you need to make sure that you're not holding your breath and you're exhaling. So those are kind of some really standard across the board preventative tips. When it comes to exercise specifically, I try to encourage people to engage their pelvic floor and transverse abdominals with that exhalation. So if you're even just doing an overhead press, you should engage your pelvic floor and exhale as you press up. If you're doing push-ups, you should engage your pelvic floor and exhale on the, you know, eccentric and concentric portions of that. So for the up and down. So making sure that you're engaging your pelvic floor and using your breath during fitness workouts and stuff like that. And then if you see doming in your abdominal wall, if you have leakage of urine, those are signs that it's just too much for your tissues and you want to scale back.
And see a physical therapist.
And I encourage everyone to see a PT during pregnancy. So just proactively.
Yes, that is my mission. Second trimester is finding a good pelvic floor therapist I feel comfortable with in my area. And I'm excited to be able to share about that too once I find that person, because I, you know, even though I'm not having symptoms, having that feedback and that understanding of what's happening as I'm continuing to go through this pregnancy, and then someone I can come to afterwards, again, no matter what might happen, just knowing that I have that support and that understanding, because we don't know all the time. You know, we can take a mirror and we can look or we can feel, which is great, but having a professional actually having this understanding, okay, do this movement and let's feel what's happening, or do this breath and let's feel what's happening, and getting that concrete feedback as you're moving, as you're breathing, is so important, because we can, you know, you can highlight all these things. You should exhale here. You should feel your pelvic floor.
Right.
But a lot of times people don't understand quite what that pelvic floor lift is supposed to feel like. And am I doing it, or is this really happening? So having that feedback from a person is so invaluable, and something that I will continue to always preach and promote, and hope that women are able to have the access to it as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's so right, that it really is so helpful to have somebody. It's like a trainer. I mean, you're really going through one of the biggest physical transformations that you'll go through in your life. And I say this all the time, I'm like, we don't run a marathon without training for that race. So why are we kind of expecting folks to go through pregnancy and then birth and then postpartum and not really have a whole lot of guidance about how to navigate that, or, you know, whether it's physical support or emotional support, or, and even when it comes to birth, I mean, we talk a lot about strengthening, but really in that third trimester, I focus a ton on relaxation. Like, you don't have to have super strong pelvic floor muscles to push a baby out. Your uterus pushes the baby out. We want your pelvic floor muscles to relax and let go. And oftentimes folks will go into birth and they're, you know, they're being coached by a nurse or a physician that says, push, push. And they're like, I don't know how to push. Well, of course they don't. They've never been taught or trained. So I think it really helps people feel more empowered going into these experiences that they've worked with somebody, a coach even, to help them really prepare.
So important. I mean, even one of my girlfriends who's also pregnant, she's now in her third trimester, and she's a nurse. So she's up on her feet and she's constantly moving around. And she was getting a lot of bad pubic symphysis pain. And one of her charge nurses, I think is what it is. So someone who's in charge is like, that's normal. You just have to push past that. Like that's going to happen. And even if she's talking to her OB, you know, her OB doesn't give any feedback because that's not their area of expertise, and that's okay. So knowing that there's a pelvic floor therapist who can actually help with this is so important, is so key. Can you talk a little bit about these common pains that happen?
Let's get into that. That's normal comment.
That, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope we aren't scaring people about pregnancy, because it really is amazing. I think we just don't realize that these things can pop up and they can actually be so easily managed as well. So as you mentioned, Jen, one of the most common things are, you know, you've got these ligaments in the front of your pelvis and the back of your pelvis that are softening and helping your pelvis expand. We want that. We want that pelvis to expand to accommodate a growing baby. That also means you may have a little bit more laxity or a little bit less stability to your pelvis. And that means we may want to use some external things for support. So some pain in the front where your pubic symphysis is, that can often feel like a sharp shooting pain when you are rolling over in bed or taking the first step when you get up from standing, something like that, where there's a shift in your pelvis. Another thing is sacroiliac joint pain. So one of the joints in the back, it feels like lower back pain. But again, if you're standing on one leg when you are putting on your socks or shoes or going up and down stairs and you've got a little bit of back pain, that's something that can be really easily fixed. Sciatica or piriformis syndrome, or whatever people want to call it, a pain in the butt, you know, it is, you get tight, tense muscles in your glutes. You have a little bit of laxity in your joints, but you can have sharp shooting pain down the back of your thigh. And that's debilitating. I mean, I've had people who have been like, I can't work as a nurse. I can't be a teacher and be on my feet, or I can't take care of my other kids, when some of these things can be so easily managed with physical therapy. And, you know, we often think of these physical symptoms of like, oh, it's just a normal part of pregnancy. They're totally common, but they're also so easily fixed.
Yeah. And I think that that's, again, an important thing to point out. Like, your body's going through this intense and incredible physical transformation. And while your body's releasing these amazing hormones that you need to be able to relax around the pelvis and start to create the ability to pass that baby through, your body still kind of craves some stability where it normally has had it. And so it might try finding that stability elsewhere. So again, to be able to have someone to walk you through and coach you along this path so that your body can do what the body does, while, and you can just think one step or one hair more critically, or be a little more educated on how you can support that change and that transition, and address some of these things that are maybe common, but don't have to be normal. And I think that's one of the pelvic floor therapists, a lot of the pelvic health therapists that I know, like, absolutely loathe the, oh, that's normal comment.
Right.
I want to drop another one, which is incontinence, where you've kind of mentioned a couple times here, leaking. You know, to what degree can people, either prepartum or postpartum, expect leaking? When might it be something that they can work on or address or do something to help with some leaking that they might be experiencing?
Right. So incontinence is the leakage of urine, which can happen with, you know, activities where you have more pressure in your, on your pelvic floor, like coughing, sneezing, jumping, laughing, running, or it can happen when you have a really strong urge to get to the bathroom and you don't make it in time. So that is a sign of pelvic floor dysfunction. So, you know, some people say, oh, it only happens a little bit when I cough or sneeze. It's not a big deal. The thing is that if these things don't get addressed, the research clearly shows that if you have incontinence during pregnancy, you're more likely to have it postpartum. So if we're able to work with, you know, folks during pregnancy and really work on those issues early, we're going to help improve their outcomes later. The same thing if you have urinary leakage at 3 months postpartum, you're going to be more likely to have it at a year postpartum. So oftentimes after giving birth, people think, oh, it'll just get better over time. My doctor's like, just give it time and see what happens in 6 months. Well, if at 3 months postpartum, you still have any type of pelvic floor dysfunction or pain or particularly leakage, it's not necessarily just going to resolve on its own. I would go ahead and just start proactively working with someone to address it. I mean, there are such major improvements in quality of life when you're able to not have to worry about leakage, or it's not preventing you from running or exercising and things that are so beneficial to us after giving birth, that we want to support moms going back to doing the things that they love and finding their identities and staying active and managing stress. But there's this whole other kind of underbelly of symptoms that can prevent them from doing that, which we're often not even aware of, or they're just told, hey, deal with it and kind of keep me posted in a year.
Mm-hmm. So huge. Are there, and I know this would be hard to say because every person is individual, but as someone is going through and starts having maybe pubic symphysis pain right in the front of those joints, is there something that they can start doing now as they're waiting for their physical therapy appointment to start addressing?
Sure. My most important thing for something like a sacroiliac joint pain or pubic symphysis pain is using a stability belt. So using my favorite one is called the Sirola belt, and just having somebody get a little bit of external compression to help keep their pelvis more stabilized as it's healing, right? Like, we use this for knee braces or ankle braces. Like, you want to give it a little bit of time just to, you can't activate that stability right away. So giving them some external compression to do that. The other thing is avoiding the movements that are irritating, you know, getting them used to not sit down to put on their socks or shoes instead of standing up. Teaching folks how to shave their legs, you know, so they don't have to stand on one leg, or little things like how to pick up their kids so that they're not, you know, having to kneel down on the ground to do it or lunge. Things that really we're asked to do all throughout the day, but nobody gives us kind of these modifications or recommendations to take care of. And then another thing is those joints really stiffen with activating your transverse abdominal muscles. So once we're able to make sure, oh, they don't have any overactivity or spasm, we can start teaching them how to activate and engage those transverse abdominal muscles to stiffen those sacroiliac and pubic symphysis joints so that they can get more internal stability. That's kind of just been changing over the course of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. And I really like that because you bring up the pelvic belt or the pelvic sling, you know, to give some of that external support and pressure. And then, of course, once things are checked out to make sure there's no significant dysfunction, we teach the body how to do that itself a little bit, using right. that those abdominals to act as that internal sling or belt or corset. And I think that's important in anything in life. If we're using an external tool, like, okay, our body likely has some sort of mechanism or ability to do that internally. And that's an incredible transition. I had one more question about leaking and going to the bathroom. And I've heard women and I've heard men kind of talk about this issue where you might be sitting down, going to the bathroom, you feel like you're done urinating, nothing else is coming out, and you go to stand up and boom, there's more. And I've had friends of mine who I played college football with bring this up to me. I've experienced a degree of this. I have noted pelvic floor dysfunction and that I've dealt with throughout life, and managing pressures was not always my forte as I went through my athletic career. So is there something specific that might be resulting in that, where you feel like you're done going to the bathroom or going pee and then stand up and more urine comes out?
Totally. This is actually not uncommon at all. And I even see it. I mean, I see it in my kids sometimes, they'll walk away and they have like a little spot on their underwear or something, you know? So there's two things that are contributing. Is that one, your bladder is never completely empty. You always have a little bit of residual volume in your bladder. So I tell folks this because there is this tendency to sit on the toilet and think about pushing pee out all the time. But I'm like, you could sit there all day and get a little bit of squirt out every single time. So one of the important things is that I want to encourage people to relax when they're voiding. So this goes for male and female bodies. You don't want to push when you pee. Again, it's almost like kinking a hose and trying to push water through it. If you can relax, take a couple big deep breaths and really encourage your muscles to relax, your bladder will do the work for you. If someone wants to sit down to do that, that can help for male and female bodies. For men, sometimes I tell them to put their hand up against the wall and kind of lean into it. And that can help their pelvic floor relax a little bit more so they can empty. The second thing is once you're done completely emptying, you can do a couple of Kegel contractions to push a little bit of that urine out. You've got a little bit of extra urethral length. This goes for males more than females, but it's longer in males. You've got a little bit of extra length in there where there could be a little bit of urine kind of just hanging out in there. And then once you get up and move, your pressure changes and that pushes it out. But if you do it while you're standing or sitting, you just do a couple Kegel contractions at the very end. That's going to help push a little bit of that urine out. And then the last thing is that kind of moving your hips side to side. I tell males to shake and kind of like get those last little bits out. But doing a little bit of that movement, again, helps get that last little bit of urine out. So you want to relax completely, but then at the very end, kind of move your hips a little bit and then do a couple contractions and then see if that helps get that last little bit out.
How soon after birth should you consult and go see a pelvic floor therapist? Because usually you don't see your OB follow up until 6 weeks. Do you see a physical therapist before that? Can you start, you know, some basic breathing movements, things?
Absolutely. So if you're the standard for us to see folks is between 4 to 6 weeks postpartum. So most often it's at the 6 week mark, right after they see their medical providers. But ACOG, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, actually recommended in 2018 that you have a 3 week follow up instead. And that has not been implemented yet, which I really hope eventually will take place. But if you're, you know, birthing with a midwife, often you'll see them a little bit earlier as well. But I would say 6 weeks is the standard. Sometimes it's a little bit earlier, around 4 weeks. But we usually wait about 6 weeks to start doing an internal assessment to make sure that your tissues have healed and that, you know, you're past any stages of discomfort, to do an internal assessment. But prior to that, I mean, you can totally be doing things. You don't need to necessarily be doing like hardcore, crazy core exercises, but starting to do some pelvic floor exercises and some transverse abdominal contractions to wake those muscles up initially it can feel like radio silence down there. So like doing some things to really starting to connect mind and body, you know, starting with super gentle things like, you know, leg marches and heel slides and bridges and things to really start activating your pelvic floor, activating your glutes, and going for walks is my number one thing. I mean, sometimes there's nothing that you can do. Like you can't imagine carving out 10 minutes to work out, but you can go for a walk and it's good for mind. It's good for body. It's good for baby. So I think just encouraging people to do some activity, but not overdoing it. And, you know, I really, the current research really recommends not running until you're 12 weeks postpartum. So any running or high intensity jumping, lifting, things like that, that you don't really do until 12 weeks postpartum, which can feel like a long time. But if I see in my patients, the folks who really take those first 4 to 6 weeks really easy, and then they start working back into exercise, they do so much better in the long run than those people who are trying to get back into the gym at 2 weeks post.
That's huge, because like you said, it is a hard thing to wrap your mind around, especially for those who've been so active or felt like they've done so well with their body and then they just want to get back to it so soon. But giving your body the chance to heal and actually go through the proper stages, like looking at the long run, right?
Rather than
the immediate, it could be super hard, but I think that's so important to continue to remember and to be told, so that you're not ending up with leaking or afraid, you know, to enter into sexual intercourse again because you haven't, you know, really healed. Can we talk a little bit briefly about that real quick, about
entering
back into sexual intercourse after birth? I think that can feel like a very, I mean, even just pooping after you give birth is a really scary thing. So then, you know, stepping back into sexual intercourse can feel like really daunting.
Right. And there's this pressure. There's this pressure of, I need to show up for my partner. I need to get back to my normal life. Are things going to be the same down there? And so a lot of, I think, what we go through in the beginning, and I can speak for myself, it's like, you want to kind of hang on to your old life and like get your old life back. And it really is this kind of psychological transition to like, okay, this is a new life. And like, how does this fit into my new life with a new baby, and your relationship has changed and your body has changed? So, you know, I do have some folks who go back a little bit sooner. I would say I've had people who go back around 4 weeks or 5 weeks. And then I have some people who wait until they are 12 weeks or 16 weeks postpartum. The goal of me sharing that is that there is no standard. You do not have to go back once you get clearance. You can totally wait until like you feel like you are ready and take that pressure off of yourself. Like, it will be there. The second thing is that it is common for folks to experience pain with intercourse the first time they have intercourse after giving birth, whether you've had a vaginal birth or a cesarean birth. 9 out of 10 people do experience pain. I encourage people to proactively use a lubricant. You may experience vaginal dryness, because if you are breastfeeding or lactating, you typically have vaginal dryness because your estrogen levels are lower. So just like, go ahead, proactively use a lubricant. The second thing is that you take it slow. I mean, you're not going to be having like the wildest, craziest sex after giving birth. It's going to be a little bit of like, okay, let me just check this box and like assess the situation. So that's okay. Like, take it slow, take the pressure off yourselves. Like, things will transition back to a new season, a new stage, but like, you're just kind of figuring out a little bit. And then if you do have pain, I think that's another time to really think about going in to see a pelvic floor physical therapist. I worked with a patient and she was 11 months postpartum. And she was like, I have been having pain with sex for 11 months and I don't want to have it at all. It's affecting my self-esteem. It's affecting my marriage. And within 3 sessions, she was completely pain-free. And it was like, yeah, it was amazing. And she's like, I just wish I would have known about this sooner instead of me suffering for, you know, the past, you know, 10 months. And so I really encourage folks to check in with somebody. Sometimes it can just be such a quick, simple thing to work on. It could be some scar tissue. It could be some tight muscles. It could be positioning, just somebody to help them really navigate back into that transition. But again, if you're really stressed at 6 weeks, like, you can wait longer. That's okay. There's no time frame that you're working on. Go when the time feels right for you.
I think a lot of these conversations and the answers that you've, you know, been giving, I appreciate, because it is telling everybody that each situation is individual, that just like any rehab process, you need to see the individual, see where they're at, and understand that it lands on a spectrum of recovery, and knowing the proper progression of how to do those things without going too hard right away, whether it be towards running or towards getting back into lifting or getting back into intimacy, and being able to have someone to guide you, like a pelvic floor physical therapist. I think that these are the types of conversations that I really hope help to normalize the conversation, normalize people and the understanding that, okay, this is something that I just get to do. I get to see a pelvic floor therapist to help with this, transition into a new chapter in life. And I know that there's so many places that people can go to continue to learn more from you. Just checking out your Instagram page at The Vagina Whisperer. It's the.vagina.whisperer, which is an incredible name, but even better page just with the information that you have on there. Where else can people go to learn more from you right now? Do you have any courses that they can look at getting into?
Absolutely. So my website is thevagwhisperer.com, and on there I have a whole membership. It's, you know, very reasonably priced, and it's like $29 a month. So I was like, I want it to be $1 a day, you know, because I think part of this is making it accessible. I mean, sometimes physical therapy appointments can be very expensive. Sometimes you can't take time off of work or get childcare. So part of my big mission is really access, that it's really accessible to everyone. And I have kind of a whole series for pregnancy, for postpartum, for painful sex, for childbirth, and really just kind of spoon feeding you every week of pregnancy and every week of postpartum, you know, things that can help you prepare for birth, exercises that you can do, you know, guiding you through your postpartum recovery. Or even if you are not pregnant or postpartum at all, if you have pain, if you have painful sex, what are the things that you can do at home or in conjunction with an in-person physical therapist to really help you find the relief that you need, deserve, and the support that you need. I think that we often feel really isolated when we have a pelvic floor issue. And it's really so many people experience this. And I think it's helpful to know, like, you're not alone. And literally, this is what I've done for 15 years. There are so many people who experience it. And there's so much that's out there that can help you as well.
Totally. I mean, even just yesterday, I got a DM from someone who is like, I feel like I'm so alone. My doctor just told me I have prolapse. I'm so scared. I love to lift and all of these things. And like, first of all, you're not alone. You know, there is support. Gave websites where they can look up a physical therapist and a pelvic floor therapist in person, you know, because, and I know with online so accessible, it's hard. You think, you know, it's hard to get all your information. You want to see a physical therapist in person, and then being able to be led from your membership where you have literally step-by-step education along the way. That's absolutely so huge, you know, and being a part of a community where you get to see that other people are going through struggles with you. That's everything. And will just help connect people so much more. So I love the work that you're doing, the education that you continue to put out. You're inspiring me. You've got kids, you've got your thing going, and you're still making it happen. I'm like, okay, it can happen.
It can totally. And honestly, this didn't even start until after I had kids. So if that shows you anything, it's like, sometimes we are able to pivot and really follow a passion that is just blossoming as we're blossoming as women and as moms. So I think that it has not been hindrance at all. It's actually just been made me more passionate about the work that I do and being able to help more moms access it. I mean, it's really just been incredible. So I'm super grateful for y'all having me on, and I'm just so excited to continue following your journey as well.
Thank you.
Such an important topic, and so grateful to have Dr. Reardon on to talk through the pelvic floor, all the changes that we go through, and how we really just get to continue to treat this like a lifelong journey, and how we can optimize the function of our pelvic floor and do so with help along the way. Remember, we're still accepting people into the Grateful for My Body Challenge. It just started. There's thousands of people moving through the month of November with us. We have incredible ways in this challenge to help you understand how to relax your pelvic floor and optimize that core engagement. So go down to the link in the show notes. You can still sign up for that today. And of course, we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.